Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we are holding week two of our Sound Opinions Summer School. We're putting on our professor hats and revisiting some of our favorite albums to explain why they matter. Today, we're looking at the Marvin Gaye classic, What's Going On? And later on, we'll discuss the unique presence of the wah-wah pedal in 70s music by artists including Gaye, as well as The Temptations and more. But first, What's Going On? It was released in May 1971. It remains one of the textbook examples of a great soul record.
Culmination of a period in Marvin Gaye's life which was very troubled, Jim. This man was probably as reliable a hit maker as Motown had during the 60s. He was one of the most versatile singers they had. He could go up-tempo and rough. He could sing the sweet ballads. He could do duets. He was all over the charts in the 60s with songs like Hitchhike and Can I Get a Witness, Ain't That Peculiar, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You. Series of duets with Kim Weston and Mary Wells, and finally Tammy Terrell. He was a superstar.
And a multi-instrumentalist, as versatile on piano and drums as anyone of the great Motown session players.
Absolutely. He could get down there on the floor with the musicians and work with them in addition to being the star singer in the Motown stable. Now, there's several things that occurred in Marvin Gaye's life in the late 60s that led up to the making of What's Going On and heavily influenced its tone and made it such a dramatic departure from what he had done before. To me, I think the turning point in many ways for Marvin Gaye's career was, first of all, meeting and then singing with Tammy Terrell, this great partnership of all the duet partners he had. There seemed to be a connection there, unlike any of the others. And they had some marvelous songs. Your Precious Love in 67, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, which I think was the culmination of their partnership.
Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. Ain't nothing like the real thing. No, no.
But Tammy Terrell had been suffering migraine headaches for a number of months and finally collapsed in Marvin's arms on stage in the summer of 67. She was diagnosed with brain cancer and had numerous operations thereafter, eventually dying in 1970. And Marvin never recovered from that. In many ways, people who knew him say he was a changed man after that. There was two sides to Marvin Gaye's personality. One was that he was the loyal soldier, the loyal servant of Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown Records. Berry was his friend, but also his mentor. And if Berry wanted something, Marvin was going to give it to him, even if it meant he had to sing this cheesy song, but it was going to be a top 10 hit. He would do it because he wanted to make Berry Gordy happy. You know, there was an additional layer to their relationship in that Marvin was married to Berry's older sister, Anna. They were family. The other Marvin was the moody guy who would go off by himself and not be seen for days, weeks, months sometimes at a time. He liked to get high, you know, and he thought of himself as an artist, not just a soldier on the label, but an artist who had a vision of what he wanted to do in the future that may have been very different from what Motown wanted out of.
Well, there was a year-long, retreat, pretty much, Gaye stepping out of the spotlight before What's Going On. And it included, according to some biographies, a suicide attempt. It was Berry Gordy's father that pulled the handgun out of his hand.
Yes. A troubled soul, without a doubt. Now, one of his last big hits during this great period of success in the 60s was with a song written by Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong. Strong had been one of the key Motown songwriters for a number of years already, but Whitfield was a relatively new voice in that great stable of songwriters at Motown, and a strong one. He and Strong co-wrote a song called I Heard It Through the Grapevine. And while Marvin Gaye was the first to record the song in early 67, his moody version was originally passed up for release by the label. Gladys Knight and the Pips, instead, released their upbeat version first in the fall of 67, while Marvin's came out a year later. Marvin remade the song in his own image soon after, and it became an even bigger hit once he recorded it. A number one single, absolutely ruled in 1968 on the charts. It took me by surprise. And that moodiness, that brooding nature of Marvin's version, you know, this whole notion of people are out to get me, people are talking about me, you know, and I don't like it. It fit the mood of the times. I mean, we're talking about a period here, you know, we're coming off Martin Luther King's assassination. It threw Marvin into a deep tailspin. From 1969 through 71, Marvin Gaye did not perform on a concert stage.
Right.
He spent a lot of time on his own, and the label is wondering, what's going on, man? You know, like, they were literally asking him that question, are you going to make any more music? The word was that Marvin was sitting around with these, hanging out with these football players in the Detroit Lions team, and he suddenly became enamored with this idea of becoming a professional athlete. So he was dabbling with the idea of playing football. He was arguing a lot with Anna, you know, his wife. They weren't getting along. That marriage, which started in 63, the couple separated formally in 73, eventually was divorced a few years later. So that's going on in his life.
You know, the critical shorthand, Greg, sometimes is that Marvin got political with what's going on. But he'd been thinking about these things for years. There's a famous quote of him talking about the 1965 riots in Watts as a pivotal moment in his life. And he said, with the world exploding around me, how was I supposed to keep singing love songs? And then he covers, and it becomes a hit in the UK in 1970, Abraham, Martin, and John, the song about the assassinations of Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., and John Kennedy, popularized originally by Dion, but Marvin Gaye puts his own stamp on that song.
Has anybody here seen my old friend Martin?
Well, and not to mention the fact, Jim, that a lot of black music had changed. You know, the Motown sound that had been sort of upbeat and unifying had grown darker. I'd mentioned Norman Whitfield earlier in the context of writing I Heard It Through the Grapevine. This guy, you know, simplified the Motown sound away, two or three chords, a lot of funk, a lot of attitude. Those songs that he was writing for the Temptations, Cloud Nine, mm-hmm. Psychedelic Shack, Ball of Confusion,
right.
Smiling Faces Sometimes for the Undisputed Truth. These were not happy songs.
Right.
These were songs about people who are angry, people who are oppressed. This was an extension of what Curtis Mayfield was doing with the Impressions. And then Curtis came out with his 1970 solo debut, Curtis. And the first song on it is called Don't Worry, If There's a Hell Below, We're All Going to Go.
Right.
I mean, this is dark, dark stuff.
They say don't worry, but they don't know. There can be no show. And if there's hell below, we're all.
Suddenly, black music is taking this turn. After Martin Luther King's assassination, the rioting in the streets, this is starting to be reflected back in the way music was being constructed by African Americans.
So another critical shorthand is that Marvin Gaye's the guy who made black music political. Clearly, this was already in the air, and lots of artists were moving in that direction. He just takes it further than everybody else. I think it's interesting, though, to note that the real nugget that begins What's Going On starts with a member of the Four Tops,
yeah.
Obie Benson. May 1969, the Four Tops are on tour. And Obie Benson witnesses this beating, an act of police brutality on anti-war protesters in Berkeley's People's Park. It becomes known as Bloody Thursday. He's disgusted. And he says, I saw this and started wondering, what's going on? What is happening here? What is this about? Why are they sending kids from throughout the U.S., halfway around the world, and they're losing their lives? Why are they attacking? And then we're attacking other kids who are against that in the street. He begins asking these questions. And it doesn't start with a statement, this song. It starts with a question. He goes back to Detroit after this Four Tops tour, and he sits down with one of the Motown staff songwriters, Al Cleveland, and they write a song. They take it to Marvin Gaye. Gaye is thinking of using it for another group, but they convince him, no, you should keep this, you should sing it, and Gaye rewrites the lyrics.
Gaye's rewriting the lyrics, and it was interesting that to read the quotes from Benson after Marvin, started tinkering with the song. He said he made it more ghetto.
Yeah.
You know? And as the song was being recorded in Motown, suddenly Marvin's inspired. I got to get this down. He is producing this track. He had gotten some confidence as a producer working with this group called The Originals and said, you know, I'm going to do this session myself. I don't need any help from the Motown stable of producers. One of the key changes was he comes out from behind the mixing board. The producer of the record is also singing the record, and he's sitting in the middle of the musicians on the floor of the Motown studios. Apparently, according to the musicians who were there, big cloud of smoke.
Yeah.
Not going to say exactly who it was emanating from. But
there's a lot of drinking. There's a lot of pot smoking.
Big cloud of smoke in the room at the time. Marvin at the piano at the center of it all, wearing that knit cap that was his trademark around that time. And writing, basically working the Funk Brothers, the great Motown rhythm section, through what he wanted here. Great moment in that song, the saxophone that weaves its way throughout the song, was essentially Eli Fontaine warming up.
Yeah.
He wasn't even playing on the song at the time.
Doesn't think it's a take.
Marvin says, you know, just go over there and warm up, get ready. Marvin's rolling the tape.
Mm-hmm.
He knows
mm-hmm.
what he wants. He hears it. He goes, and so Eli Fontaine comes over to join the session. He goes, okay, I'm ready, boss. Marvin goes, no, go home. You're done.
Yeah, we already got it.
We got what we needed.
Greg, even before you hear that saxophone, you hear this crazy party. People talking with one another, whooping it up, shouts of joy. We wanted to learn more about how that idea came together and the recording of the whole title track. So we thought we'd talk to someone who was there. As we mentioned earlier, Marvin had thoughts of becoming a football player, and he was hanging out with members of the Detroit Lions, including Lem Barney, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Lem contributed talking during that party scene and backup vocals to the title track, and he even earned a gold record for his contributions. Lem, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Thank you so very much.
Tell us how you and Marvin Gaye became friends. He used to come to a lot of the games, right?
Yes, he did. He certainly did. Him, along with Smokey Robinson, would support the Detroit Lions by coming down to Tiger Stadium, and afterwards we'd go over to Petey Larko's restaurant, win, lose, or draw, and they would be there. And most of the teammates got a chance to meet him and hobnob with him, and even the coaches.
So, Lem, Marvin asked you and a few other Detroit athletes to participate in the recording of What's Going On. Tell us a little bit about what that day was like.
We were over at Marvin's house, and he said, look, let's go down to the Motown studio and do this recording. And he had checked with Barry, and Barry gave him an okay, let's do it. And we went down to the studio, and about a half an hour later, we was finished. We must have did about 9 or 10 takes. And
half an hour and 9 or 10 runs through the song.
Yes, but I mean, we had done a lot of other training over at his house.
Ah, okay.
And finally, in the studio, about the 10th, taking, he said, this is it.
So the sounds of the party that kick off the title track, What's Going On, that's not faking it. You guys are having fun in the studio.
Absolutely, big time.
I've heard, and you have to confirm if this is true, there's that wild, trilling kind of sound of it. That's you?
Yes.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This is a
big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop it.
When you were working with them, did you see a different side of Marvin? You know, the Marvin in the recording studio, the guy making these records versus the guy you saw after the football games or in a more casual atmosphere?
Oh, he was very serious about it. I mean, you know, it was just like, if you listen from the earliest start, from his earliest record to his last record, he never would put anything out till he felt it was solid. And he was just a joyful singer. I look at my gold record from time to time and, you know, wish his soul will forever rest in peace.
Lem, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. A great football player and a musician with a gold record to his credit. Thanks for coming on Sound Opinions, Lem.
Thank you so very much. Good speaking with you guys.
So the last piece of the song, Jim, is he's recorded the rhythm track with the Funk Brothers.
And now, he's got that saxophone.
And now he's ready to put the final touch on, and that is the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. Again, not traditional Motown, right? David Vandepit, the arranger, working with the Detroit Symphony, comes into the studio, and they layer these strings over the top of the arrangement. And there are tears streaming down Marvin's face as he hears the playback, realizing this is what I wanted, this is what this album should be. Those black bottoms, as he calls them, with the European classical strings over the top. And then his voice at the center, orchestrated to sound like three or four Marvins. You know, there's a conversation going on with Marvin using those multitude of voices that he had within him. The rough Marvin, the sweet Marvin, the falsetto Marvin, conversing with one another in the middle of the track. This was the new sound that Marvin Gaye wanted.
We've been talking about what's going on, the single and the title track. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk about the reception of the song and dig into what's going on the album. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRN.